This is Agri Futures on Air, brought to you by Agri Futures Australia, driving innovation in Australian agriculture.
Hello and welcome to Agri Futures on Air. I'm Jane Cudahy. Today we're joined by John Harvey, the Managing Director of Agri Futures Australia, and two scholars involved in the Agri Futures Horizon Scholarship Program, a scholarship awarded to students studying an agricultural-related undergraduate degree or a STEM degree with relevant majors aligning with ag. Bill Heim is a Gunnedah boy with experience in beef cattle and cropping. He has a keen interest in plant science and genetics and hopes to work in the sector after he completes his science degree at the Australian National University. Matilda Meppin has a similar background, but she hails from Meandara, about 3.5 hours west of Toowoomba in Queensland. She's studying civil engineering and business management, and as an aspiring civil engineer, is fascinated by the infrastructure and management of water. Hello to you all.
Morning, Jane.
John, I just wanted, I've got to pick on you first, if that's okay. I just want to know, how has leadership changed for you? Because we're talking to these two young, aspiring industry leaders and scholars. So can you cast your mind back to when you were maybe in their phase of life, and how has leadership changed for you?
Well, Jane, it's changed a lot. So just to give you some context, I finished my degree from University of New England in 1984. So that's quite a while ago. And I think when I finished my degree, leadership was much more institutionalized. So as a nation, we look to our prime minister, we look to our politicians, we look to our CEOs and people in positions of power to provide leadership. And we tended to follow those nominated leaders. And as an aspiring leader, your strategy really was to work your way into one of those positions before I think you felt you'd be in a position to have great influence. Now, that's changed dramatically over the time that I've been involved in agriculture. And I think what happens now is a leader in agriculture or a leader in anything these days is somebody that people follow. And it doesn't matter what they do or where they come from. If they've got an idea and people are willing to follow and they've got a purpose, then they are a leader. So you could say leadership's a bit more democratized than what it was when I started my career.
Do modern leaders need to engage with peers differently? I think you've sort of touched on that already.
Yeah, they do. They really do. I think the most important thing is there's got to be a reason to follow somebody. So the purpose is critical. What is it you're trying to achieve? People want to do something good for the world. Everyone wants to leave the world in a better place. So as a leader, you've really got to be able to articulate what you're championing is going to make a difference. It's going to make the world better. You've got to be able to articulate that very clearly. You've got to be able to demonstrate to people that there's a real pathway to getting to that good outcome. The other part of leadership that I think has changed quite significantly is people don't want to follow a cold leader. They want to follow somebody who has got their best interest at heart. So empathy and really understanding the people that are following you and why they're following you is absolutely critical.
It's a very good point. And I want to bring Matilda and Bill into this conversation. When you're thinking about leaders in your world, would you agree with some of the sentiments from John, or how do you think about it? I'll start with you, Bill.
Yeah, I'd love to jump in there on the back of they've got to have a reason to follow you. And I think that in Australia, particularly in nowadays as opposed to in the past, workforces and groups are a lot more diverse, and the communities are a lot more diverse, and a leader needs to be able to bring out the best result for a team. And to do that, they need to be able to engage with different peers differently based on their cultures and their backgrounds. So I think a modern leader really needs to be able to engage on a cultural level, to ask questions that align with the way that they think. And, you know, some people like to speak out and some people like to sit tight. And a really good leader can bring everyone's voice out at once and facilitate an environment where everyone is able to share their opinions.
Yeah, I think all those points are really interesting, and it's really interesting to look at how modern leaders have kind of evolved. And I think even just engaging with peers differently, kind of in a modern context, I suppose we've even just seen the methods in that leaders use to engage change as, like, I suppose, social networks have evolved, and we've seen leaders who aren't, I guess, traditional leaders emerge through, like, platforms like Instagram, you can see take off. And the common thread there is something that John touched on, with having a purpose and people wanting to follow that purpose and feel on board, even if it is through a different platform that, yeah, leaders kind of come through. I guess you can see that, yeah, they have that common thread of purpose, and I think that's something that we'll definitely see going forward as well.
How does this all relate to agriculture when you consider the broad breadth that is modern agriculture in all different industries and different vocations within that? So how can that be applied?
Agriculture is something that often evokes a lot of emotion, and it's something that people feel very connected to, especially, I suppose, from a grassroots perspective of a grower even. So I think, again, bringing it back to that purpose and the more, like, emotion that the purpose a leader is trying to convey has, I think that's, like, really important for the agricultural industry in particular, maybe over any other industry. But yeah, I think that for a modern leader, that's something that is really important in the ag industry.
That's, yeah, amazing. I totally agree with that. And I just think you really need to be able to connect to some of the emotions and sympathise with them. And I think a great leader can do that in a way that they can then advertise what they're trying to achieve. So if that's creating a more innovative supply chain along the beef supply chain or grain commodities, they need to first be able to sympathise with the person, understand their operation, and then be able to connect with them on a personal level before that they can achieve their goal of innovating a system or something like that.
I might change tack a little bit. The idea of using a social licence to operate is often discussed on all levels of politics as well as with consumers, and you both sort of mentioned that in a broad sense just then. So what does that concept mean to you as an emerging leader?
So having a social licence to me is simply a recognition by the consumer and by society that we are operating with best practice, so with the farmer in mind, with the consumer in mind, and with the environment in mind. And if each industry, for me, is able to transparently show progress or effort placed in these three categories, then broadly speaking, the industry's social licence is maintained. However, probably it's a lot easier to say that than it is to do it. And I think going forward into the future, there's going to be some massive challenges with the smaller companies or smaller individual farmers being able to show that they are putting efforts into the environment, or they are putting efforts into transparency and, you know, animal welfare and all of that. So it's going to be an interesting future, understanding how we can show that from the individual farmer all the way through to when that commodity lands on someone's plate. Being able to show that these environmental factors and you know, farmer welfare and animal welfare factors have all been considered in the process of making that food appear on someone's plate.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting, Bill. And I think that our research development corporations do a really great job at putting those, like, efforts that we were kind of talking about into technical, like, science. I guess as someone from a science background, I hope that, like, the technical advancements and measurable science that we kind of can gain often through those research development corporations can be extended and shown to the public in a transparent way, so that we can kind of gain those social licenses to operate and continue to. But I think it's an interesting concept of the individual and how that looks, yeah, how it looks like for an individual, and then being able to show that across a bigger sector, as in the agricultural sector, to their social license to operate, and then breaking that down into the different sectors within agriculture, because it's so broad. I suppose that's an interesting intersection for a consumer to kind of consider, I suppose.
John, so I was going to ask you next, you know, in terms of AgriFutures Australia, how do you think about and have learned to incorporate the idea of social license in the work that you're doing with a number of different industries?
So, Jane, a couple of things. It's a huge issue for Australian agriculture, and it doesn't matter what industry, whether you're agriculture or mining or any other sector. It's critical that the values of that industry align with the community values. Okay, and so, and if they don't, you'll always have strife. And those community values change over time. We're seeing them change. We're seeing them change. The expectations of the community in relation to agriculture have changed significantly in the last 20 to 30 years. We are actually doing some work at the moment with the other research development corporations where we're looking and measuring and surveying people in the community, mostly in cities, trying to understand what their expectations of agriculture. And quite interestingly, the top three drivers for them are, and the number one is they expect and they want farmers to look after the environment. That's number one. The second one is they want agricultural industries to be responsive. So when issues are raised, they listen and they take on board the feedback and they do something about it. And thirdly, and surprisingly thirdly, is they want high quality food and fibre out of agriculture. But quite interestingly, that was third priority. It wasn't number one priority. The first priority was they want to know that farmers are doing a great job of looking after the environment. And as I say, we need to listen to that community expectation as a sector and then position ourselves to meet that expectation.
And how, you know, that obviously is quite a shift in thinking to say 20, 30 years ago when we're producing food and fibre for the nation. So I just want to go back to Bill and Matilda. We'll start with you, Bill. When you are studying these science-related subjects and agricultural subjects, is that a big part of, are you seeing that translated to that level as well?
From the little experience I have had in seeing research conducted and really trying to think about how this is going to translate into actual use on farm, there is a lot of effort that goes into trying to advertise that these things are beneficial for the farmer, they're beneficial for the environment, and the whole aim of what we're trying to do in the lab is trying to translate this into better productivity and better things, better advantages for the environment. So I do think that even at the lab base, we're still working towards showing that we're doing the right thing and we're trying to engage the general everyday consumer and show that and maintain our social license to adapt to plants and to make things better for the farmer in the end.
You're both studying science. Australia has a proud history of research and extension services, but not always with adoption. So how do you see your role in changing that, or can it be changed? Matilda, we'll start with you.
Yeah, I think that historically Australian farmers want to adopt new technologies and they want to be able to produce better, like higher quality products. Coming from, I guess, a technical science background, it's easy for me to look at something that's scientific and say that's best practice, that's what's doing, that's the best way to do something. But I suppose sometimes we have to also look at the bottom line and understand that there's no point in like doing science if it's not going to be adopted. And I guess that comes back to when you first start a research or undertake a science experiment, we have to ask the question of why. And again, that probably comes back to the community values of, is this something that is wanted? Is this something that's wanted that consumers want to see? Is this something that a producer or grower wants to see being done? And then I guess if your science experiment or research is conducted in with that basis of this is something that is wanted, then that's going to make adoption a lot easier because that's kind of the whole initiation of the process. And I suppose it's easier to convey and extend the knowledge that you've gained if it's something that originally was wanted to be achieved. Yeah. So I suppose I see adoption being starting from the very start of the process and making sure that the end product that we're producing is something that has been thought about from the start, I suppose, in being adopted. We're not just doing science for the sake of science.
John, you've got a long and rich history in this particular area with extension and adoption. How have you seen the way that science is adopted in the paddock over your tenure?
I reckon Matilda's just summed it up magnificently. It's really hard to get science adopted if it's answering the wrong question or it's only looking at the technical aspects. And I just love what Matilda said about really got to start with what's the pain point, what's the problem the farmer's got that needs to be solved. And if you can involve them right at the start in defining the problem, but also if you can involve them right through the whole process of doing the experimentation, they will challenge all the way along to ensure that we get an outcome which is useful to them. Yeah, look, I'm 100% with what Matilda said. You know, start with a farmer, involve them all the way through, and adoption won't be an issue. If you start with a technical problem that you think you've got a solution to, and it might be a fantastic technical solution, if it doesn't actually meet the drivers of the farm business or the farmer and the farm family, you're never going to get adopted.
And I think, John, if I can just jump in there as well, having a farmer being involved in the science aspect as well, they'll probably bring up questions and problems that maybe the scientist or the technical person might not have even thought about when they were conducting the experiment, and they'll challenge that science as well and probably improve it, I think.
Totally. I remember years ago working with farmers around Kingaroy looking at no-till. And this is when no-till was just starting out in cropping. And there was a whole lot of issues around. It was sort of about it didn't make you a lot more money at that stage, it does now, but then it was really sort of break even. But the reason farmers adopted was it gave them more time to be able to play cricket with the kids. And that was the driver. It was a social driver. It was the fact that they weren't spending hours and hours and hours on tractors. They had more time to actually enjoy life and be part of the community.
Bill, did you have anything to add to what these two are talking about?
Not a great deal. That was, like, I really agree with everything that's said there. There's no point developing a solution and then trying to find a problem. You've got to start with the problem and then develop the solution. But one other thing that I've noticed just in my experiences is that often those that are developing the science and the technology have never actually stepped foot in a paddock, have never even grown, say, wheat out for a full life cycle. And I think that in way of increasing adoption, it'd be really important for those in the academic side of development to really understand the practical side, spend a bit of time in the paddock and understand, you know, the day-to-day processes so that they know that what they're developing fits in with the farmer and their practices.
That's a very good point. So in the course that you're studying, how many, like what percentage at a rough guess do you reckon would be from a practical rural background such as yourself?
In science, looking at plant science, it would be extremely small. It's pretty much, completely ruled by city folk who just happen to have a real love for science and interest in plant science. But as for practical experience, it'd be 5% at best.
I just want to, we have the opportunity to ask each other a couple of questions. So I might take a back seat for a second. And John, have you got anything that you'd like to ask these two?
Yeah, for sure. So I guess one of the things that strikes me is that you guys, you two in particular, are going to be the leaders of the future for agriculture. Your views on what's important are critical because we need to be getting ready for that. So can you maybe, if it's okay, maybe starting with Bill, starting with you, what do you think one or two of the key challenges, opportunities are for Australian agriculture over the next 10 or 15 years?
For me, I'm really interested in ag tech, and I think that's just a key opportunity for Australia to basically create another export industry. We can, if we do it right and are at the front, in front of the curve, we have an opportunity to get a large slice of the international pie, so to speak, of the money out there that people are willing to spend on ag tech. Ag tech's extremely useful for places like Australia and more generally globally for industries like ours, where we need to start reducing labour costs, we need to increase productivity, and we need to start making decisions based on data and not just gut feeling or the way it's always been done in this paddock. So for me, ag tech is one of those real gemstones that we're just sitting on, and we haven't quite understood how we can use it, and you know, the farmer hasn't understood how they can use the data yet. But as we move into the future and ag tech slowly becomes more and more mainstream, I think that's just a huge opportunity for Australian agriculture.
I totally share your passion for ag tech. There's just so much potential. I've never seen so many new technologies as what we're seeing just at the moment impacting agriculture. Matilda, what about you?
Thanks, John. I am really interested in water specifically. I'm a little bit left of field with the doing an engineering degree, but I've taken a bit of an interest in the water sector. And I'm really excited about the opportunity of being able to harness some of those technologies that Bill kind of touched on to increase our water efficiency, really. I think water is key to all Australian agriculture, and I'm really excited to see, to be able to quantify our water use from a technical science perspective. But just through this chat as well, I've kind of had my eyes open to a little bit, not rushing into that technical quantifying space, but I'd love to see the opportunities that growers really want from their water. And I think I'd be really excited about the opportunity to kind of get out and, yeah, see what other like water practices there are around Australia. I guess I only probably have a very small perspective of that. But I think as being like an arid kind of climate nation that Australia is, we do water use pretty well, but I'm excited about the opportunity to advance that even further.
It's a hugely important issue for Australian agriculture, particularly for us people that are located in the Riverina or in the Murray Darling, where water is such a limiting resource.
Matilda or Bill, you have a couple of questions for John too, don't you?
So I've got a couple of questions, and the first one being, as the commodity prices are defined on an international market, for Australian agriculture to remain competitive internationally, what do you see are the key things that the industry and the government need to strive towards? And what are we excelling at? What are you optimistic about? And what are the major lags that you believe need to be brought up to speed to remain internationally competitive?
It's a great question. And there's a couple of aspects to it. But one of the worrying things at the moment is that our increase in productivity, the growth in productivity, has actually started to flatten out. So if you look at the data over the last 5-10 years, the total factor productivity, which is a measure of your growth in productivity, has completely plateaued. So for us to stay competitive, for us to stay highly profitable, then we do need to keep improving the efficiency through which we grow our crops. And that's critical. You spoke, Bill, before about, you know, your excitement for ag tech, and I share that. And I do think that some of the digital technologies, some of the, you know, the sensors, Internet of Things, machine learning, artificial intelligence will potentially allow us to apply some of our inputs much more efficiently and increase our yields. So I think there is huge potential in using some of these new technologies, using advanced genetics to increase our efficiency through which we grow crops. And in the environment we're in, though, we need to be able to do that in a way which still completely protects and enhances the environment. So it's not insignificant challenges. And just to add to that picture, you know, we've still got a population growing in the world, and we're still talking about, you know, 10 billion people by 2050. So the demand for food is going to continue to increase. So that's good. But the challenge will be, how do we continue to feed that level of population when the actual resource, the land resource that we grow the crops on, is not getting any bigger? So, yeah, quite a few challenges there, and that's why the whole agriculture innovation network that we have in Australia and around the world is so important. It's so important we work together, we share ideas. It's so important that we don't remain an island here in Australia and just do our own thing. We're too small. We're only 2% of the world's market in the agriculture innovation space. We've got to partner. We've got to know what's happening globally. We've got to be connected.
And so how, when you, just to follow up on a couple of the last comments you had then, John, with, you know, we are going to have to continue to grow more and more food on these variable soils. So what about, how does that affect workforce attracting and retaining? We've seen massive problems in the last 2 years, especially not just because of COVID, but people's willingness and access to work. So how do you see that playing into some of these advancements?
So labour and workforce are going to be huge challenges for all sectors in Australia, not just agriculture. But I think they're going to be exacerbated in agriculture. So there's a couple of things about it. One of them is we need to be really careful how we promote our industry to the outside world, to people that live in the cities. And we need to be, I think, really careful to really tell the story about the optimism that's in agriculture, the opportunities that are in agriculture, and the fact that you can have an incredibly satisfying, rewarding career in agriculture. I'm, you know, in the past we've looked at very much trying to keep the next generation from the land on the land. And we obviously need to keep doing that. There's no question about that. But I think the challenge now is, how do we convince people in the cities who may have fantastic skills in things like computer technologies, robotics, automation, artificial intelligence, how do we convince them that agriculture has got huge opportunities for them where they can do good things to feed the world and also protect the environment? Mm. And I think selling that story is an absolutely critical part of ensuring we get the right workforce into agriculture.
Matilda, do you have any thoughts on that with the, you know, the vocation that you've chosen and with some of your peers at university and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I think that's a really interesting question. And I think, and this is probably not the answer to the biggest part, but when I have friends who have come out west or been on a property or done placement anywhere in regional Australia, I think that's the selling point for them when they see and feel it and the agricultural and small communities when they come out here and start to become involved, it sells itself, I think. So I guess the hardest part is just getting people out here, and then the rest of it is often done for us. But I guess I don't really have the answer to how you start that initial link, and I'd love to hear what John's thoughts are on that. But yeah, I think a lot of it will do the job for us just if we get people out here initially. And yeah, I've seen that happen time and time again, just personally with friends who have never had any exposure to the agriculture landscape at all. And they take one step into regional Queensland and they're blown away by small communities and their warmth, and they're just blown away by the landscape as well, I think. I'm not sure how you make that initial link. No, that will not blow anyone away for sure.
Matilda, do you have any questions that you'd like to ask?
I guess we've talked a lot about today consumer perception and trying to understand growers and producers, trying to understand their values and as well as consumer values. And I wonder who kind of feels responsible for taking on that role and how, I guess, we go about getting a really good understanding for that. Is that something that is coming from a more like a government group, or what's the best way to gain those values and insights, and then how do you convey that to the people who are conducting or trying to answer the problems that the values, consumer values is one thing, and then producers' values are another as well. If that makes, that's probably a bit of a broad question, but yeah, who is like responsible for gaining that information, and then how do you convey that information to the people who are trying to answer problems for the agricultural industry?
Matilda, it's a really good question, and it's a difficult one to answer, because anybody could step up and take responsibility to lead that area. The risk is that everyone sits back and waits for somebody else to do it. So I can very much, I can see, for example, RDCs, we're responsible for innovation. Is it our role? I don't know. NFF, National Farmers Federation, or the representative organisation. Yep, they could stand up and do it. Or increasingly what we're seeing is just groups, and you mentioned Instagram before and Facebook and all the rest of it, but what we're increasingly seeing is just people stepping up and then coalescing around an issue and solving that issue. So the leadership can literally come from anywhere. I think there is a bit of a groundswell. I think there is a bit of a realization that, and there's a lot of passion and a lot of optimism around agriculture at the moment. And I think that passion is contagious, and that's what will actually, I think, change that image of agriculture, is people just getting up and passionately talking to their friends and their mates down the pub or whatever about how fantastic, things are. And we've been through that phase of, it's tough on the land and we've got droughts and we've got all the rest of it. Nobody wants, when you see those images, it's not attractive. It's not sort of something that says, oh, I wouldn't mind doing that. But when you see the country looking like it is now, when you look at you just look at the last wheat harvest, just unbelievable. The dollars that have been made, why wouldn't you want to be involved? And that's the part of it I think we've got to highlight and sell to the community.
I did. I just have one another question for John, if that was all right. We're talking about ag tech and some of the innovations that are around at the moment. But I want to know from you, what's the one piece of technology or an industry that's really got you excited personally right now? Like, what do you talk to people in boardrooms about that you're super excited about in the next few years?
I think Bill probably hit on it. I think we're sitting on an absolute treasure chest in terms of developing and exporting and creating a new sector, a whole new sector, which is ag tech. And not just ag tech for our farmers, though that is incredibly important and they will be the primary beneficiary. But why not export it? A lot of these digital-based technologies are highly scalable and can be easily exported, and it doesn't mean you have to go overseas. Some of them can be delivered through the internet from Australia, or most of them can. So I do think there is potential for Australia to be the agri-tech hub of the Southern Hemisphere, and I think we should be going for broke to position around that. And we're good at farming. We're good at science. We're good at research. We're good at agriculture. We're good at water. Why wouldn't we be fantastic at agri-tech? And why shouldn't we be the Southern Hemisphere hub for the world in the agri-tech space, the agri-food tech? So I think that's a huge opportunity for Australia at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Are there any other questions that the three of you have for each other?
I had one regarding social license. And I was wondering, like, as we said before, social license is not something that our parents have really had to consider in their past when growing and producing beef and grains. Yet it's largely this generation that is still at the helm of farming. And I was wondering from you, John, how do we go about working with them and educating them on the fact that the way that they produce is looked at by society and is important to our agriculture's social license?
So it might be a bit controversial here, but I think a lot of our tactics or our strategy to date has been about trying to convince them that we're doing a good job, and trying to convince them that what we're doing is sustainable, and trying to convince people that, you know, we're looking after animals in the way that they would like. So we've taken an approach of trying to change their view. I just think there might be an opportunity to listen to what they're saying and ask the question, in what they're saying, what are the opportunities? What are the things they're looking for? And how do we meet those? So I think you could find some huge opportunities to have very, very successful systems and production and businesses that are tweaked to that community expectation, that community need a little bit more. And you know, this humanization of pets is huge in cities where, you know, pets almost become, well, they are, they become a member of the family. But, and the, if you look at the increase in veganism happening right around the world, So and you can see that as a huge threat, or you can look at it and say, well, okay, now what's the opportunity there? What do we need to do? How do we actually turn that into a benefit and into an opportunity? And I think we are starting to see that. We're seeing a number of companies in Australia, for example, making plant-based protein burgers and what have you. And that might be part of it. I honestly do believe there's always will be a role for meat. There's no question about that. It'll probably end up being worth more and probably go into the higher value meals, and maybe some of the plant-based proteins will be in the more, you know, everyday type activities. So there are opportunities, and I think we've just got to look for them. But I'm wary about thinking that we can change them. We've probably got to align ourselves with their expectations.
And plant-based options aren't necessarily, you know, animal free either. Like, if you're cultivating huge hectares of crops, you're damaging essentially ecosystems for some type of animal. So that doesn't often come into the conversation when talking about plant-based proteins. And so when you're talking about conversations with people and consumers, you sort of, do industry bodies and individual industries or individual producers need to be having those sort of ground-based conversations with their consumers through just like taxi conversations or in a restaurant like you just mentioned, or, you know, a Facebook page or Instagram posts?
I probably haven't made it very clear, because it's probably about us in the industry listening to that community sentiment and really understanding it, and not necessarily rejecting it. That's probably what I'm saying. It's real. It's there. There might be perceptions, but perceptions are real. Once we understand those perceptions, then we can position accordingly. And I think we do a fantastic job of looking after the environment. Farmers are ecologists. You know, a lot of people love their land. And we know from our research that that's important to people in the city. How do we communicate that? How do we communicate that passion that Australian farmers have for their land and protecting it and giving it to the next generation in better condition than what they received it? How do you communicate that? Because that aligns with the community value. It's happening, but how do you show it? So maybe I do have a question for both Matilda and Bill. Maybe start with Matilda. But in terms of your career, what are your aspirations? What do you want to achieve in agriculture?
Just having this talk today, it's made me really excited for agriculture, and I'm really excited to, I guess, become more involved. I think for me personally, I think it probably comes back to what I touched on before, water. Technically, that's probably the area I feel most proficient in. So I'd like better efficiencies within the water and agricultural industry, probably particularly in irrigation. We already do such a great job at it already, but I think we can do an even better job at it. And I would love to just play a small part in any technical proficiencies that we can have there. But yeah, I'm really excited about all the opportunities in ag, and I really loved your point before, John, about listening, and I think that always presents more opportunities, and I'm really excited to see how the more I listen, the more opportunities I can probably have within my career, I think.
And Bill?
Yeah, I completely agree with that, and I'm extremely excited about the future of ag as well, and I just want to be part of moving the needle towards the positive end, for how people view ag, for how people experience it that are actually in ag. And I just think there's no other sector in the world that has the capacity to incite change like agriculture. We persist over like half of global land mass, and we even enter the sea. So we're at the centre of everything that matters in the future. We can increase sustainability if we do it right, and we can feed the world's population while doing it. And we have the ability to fight global warming and preserve biodiversity. There's just so much capacity agriculture to do good, and I just am super excited to be a part of that in the future. And I think that selling that message is going to bring the brightest minds into agriculture, and we're going to have interactions with sectors that previously we didn't even consider part of agriculture, and they didn't even consider agriculture as relevant to them. So it's just a really bright future, and I'm excited just to be part of a positive difference.
Thank you, Bill. That's great.
I was going to say that is some terrific sentiment from both of you. So I think that's a really good place to wrap up today. And thank you so much for such a constructive and vivid conversation. So John Harvey, Bill Hyam and Matilda Meppham, thank you very much.
No worries. Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Matilda. And thank you, Jane. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Agri Futures On Air, a podcast brought to you by Agri Futures Australia. For full access to a huge backlog of stories on Australia's agricultural trends and innovations, research outcomes, inspiring stories from our rural leaders, and insights into new and emerging rural industries, please subscribe to Agri Futures On Air on your favourite podcasting app. You can also find more information at our website, agrifutures.com.au.